as I gaze from my window at the moon in its flight, my thoughts all stray to you. In the still of the night, while the world is in slumber, without number, darling, when I say to you.
And I say to you, it is 1 o'clock here at WHFR Dearborn, and it's time for our public affairs show, our weekly public affairs show, the new WHFR Journal. Local news and alternative views. Stay tuned today for the next hour for our primary election special.
What do you love about the Dearborn homecoming?
I love seeing all the classic cars.
My kids and I just love all the wacky contests and the carnival rides and all the fun stuff.
I come to check out all the great music acts.
Wow, I really enjoy coming here looking at all the art from all the great vendors.
Oh, the food is so great here!
Come join 89.3 WHFR.FM and all the fun of Dearborn Homecoming 2010 on August 6th through the 8th, where we will be broadcasting live and making waves from Ford Field. There is something for everyone.
We love Dearborn Homecoming!
Welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. Local news and alternative views for Dearborn and the surrounding area. Today, July 30th, so close to the big primary election. Yeah, I know some of you are saying, who cares? It doesn't matter. I don't vote anyway. Well, not the people listening to the show, I trust. So on this show, we're going to go over all the things we got wrong on the previous shows about the election and some things we haven't covered before then. And with me in that noble effort is our WHFR news director, Amy Powers. Welcome, Amy, again.
Good afternoon. How are you, Jay?
Well, we're doing fantastic here. I mean, I got out to the Dearborn Farmers Market and got my pastry this morning. Didn't have the usual apple fritter. No. They were sold out.
Ooh.
In fact, my favorite bread was sold out.
Oh my!
So I had to take second choice for bread and pastry. But everything is great,
but that's still...
I got to explore some really great pastry delicacies. There's like two other vendors of little exotic pastries there, and I had I don't usually have a chocolate thing, but it was a chocolate almond pastry. It was fantastic. So I don't know, maybe heck with those apple fritters from now on.
I guess the two for Dennis and I must have already been eaten by someone.
Let me just tell you, they were excellent.
Oh.
And let me say that you would have loved it. Yeah, and I'm sorry I'm late. You guys were so patient.
I didn't mention your name yet.
I had to finish my apple fritter and my bread. That last loaf of bread.
That's where it went. So we do recommend, besides every Friday morning from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m., you might want to get out there early, too, shortly after 8 or 9, because some of the vendors, they're getting so popular out there that they're selling out on their best stuff. But even the second best stuff that I found this morning looks fantastic, and got some blueberries. There were a lot of blueberries today out there, and so... a fun time was had by all. And of course, next Friday, as you heard from we began the show with our Dearborn Homecoming announcement, the new WHFR Journal, next Friday from 1 to 2 p.m., we will be live Fun in the Sun, broadcasting for the whole hour through a live connection back to the studio. And who knows who we're going to interview next week. We don't know, but somebody's got to be at homecoming from 1 to 2 p.m.
You can count on it.
And we can count on that. And if not, well, we got the papers and so on. Yeah, Friday, especially in the morning, is what they call Elder Fest. It is a lot of activities, especially tailored to seniors. I noticed they're doing a breakfast or a lunch, and often it's a bunch of sugary sweet things or high-fat things. And this year, they're advertising on their brochure as a healthy breakfast.
Okay.
For the first time ever.
Which can also be sweet.
Yeah. It can. Oh, well, absolutely.
Often the breakfasts, which are free to the seniors, are sponsored by an elected representative, you know, or somebody hoping to get elected,
right,
or one of the healthcare networks. And, you know, it doesn't make sense if you feed an unhealthy breakfast to these people, they die, and then they can't vote for you or continue paying your insurance premiums, you know. So it doesn't make sense not to have healthy. And I saw the word there. I just don't know what they mean by healthy.
Oh, yeah. That means a lot of things to different
people. Or how many people are going to eat that extra fruit serving and for breakfast, you know. But they're going to try this year. So good for them. And we're going to do, as I said, the journal live, but also about three times an hour. Oh, my gosh. From Dearborn Homecoming, from the WHFR booth, which is right across, I believe, as it was last year, from the carousel, from the amusement park area, just before you go over the bridge to the Ford Field, we'll be doing reports from the field. So people, officials that maybe won the primary and want to talk to us, Mayor O'Reilly always comes by, and we will just keep you up to date all next weekend, Friday through Sunday, about what's coming up, what's happening at the field, weather reports, all kinds of fun stuff. And so WHFR is your station to tune into for the greatest moments of the Dearborn Homecoming, which we'll be going over in detail, actually, on our broadcast. Again, at least three times an hour, we'll be coming in with 3 to 5 minute, sometimes 10 minute segments, telling you what's going on. So from approximately 10 or 11 next Friday morning, we want to try to get the farm market report in from that location. And then from 11 o'clock on, definitely we'll be doing the three-time-an-hour reports, and then the journal will be live from out there. And, of course, always on the podcast if you can't make it. But maybe you want to come on down and visit us, at least the journalist on this show, myself, Jay Koronick, Amy Powers, Dennis Reimars, will be down there for the journal show. And then throughout the weekend, we'll be in and out along with the rest of the WHFR staff. And it'd be great to see you and hear what you think about our station, suggest new ideas, new things happening around town. So come on down to the booth and take a look at all the things that are going to be going on. But today, the election special. And what I'd like to feature first here is the very well-expressed I think, insightful editorial opinion from Jack Lessenberry from this week's Metro Times. And here we go. Okay. Now, he filed this report from Copper Harbor, Michigan. So it's good to know that there's still an internet connection, or he used a carrier pigeon or something from Copper Harbor. Okay.
Well, as far away as that is, it's still, I mean, it's civilization. It's a big tourist spot.
Yeah, no doubt.
I'd throw that
in think
there.
He was on some kind of vacation, as he tells here. But he says, go vote on Tuesday. Tuesday, August 3rd, coming up, folks. And then he uses a word we can't use on this show. Kind of a swear word, a little profanity, but that's okay.
He's off the air all the time.
He's trying to get the point across, and he goes on by specifically saying this. Listen to the words, folks. Jack Lessenberry. There may be no more important election in Michigan history than this year's. In Michigan history. All the history of Michigan. What does it go back, 1850 or something?
It
became a state?
But with all due respect, Jack Lessenberry's not necessarily young anymore.
I think he was born around that time, so as I was. John McClane always joked, he's older than dirt.
That's right.
He said about himself.
That was accurate, though.
And that didn't help his campaign any. personally, my spin on that phrase is the next election is always going to be the most important.
Mm-hmm. You know,
always going to be the most important in history because it's the one that's going to matter
right.
to the direction of the future
exactly.
more than any other election.
And we certainly heard that during the 2008 presidential election. This is the most important election in our history.
But in general, they always are.
Yes.
You know, if you vote, if you care, and because that's the future. These are the people we are giving power too. Power over the rest of us, and day-to-day power in making decisions and giving us directions and making suggestions on changes and making those changes happen through our legislative process. So the next election is always most important. But he goes on to explain more, and I will too.
No, I was just going to say, but I think we all know what he means based on our current state of the state.
Yeah.
I think he's worried it could get worse, you know. I mean, and with the wrong decisions, it could be.
Well, that's what he says here. He says, we, those of us who bother to vote, that is, will choose a new governor and mostly new legislature. That's the case every few years. But this one comes at a time when the state's formerly auto-based economy badly needs reinventing and our politics and government are no longer working. Next Tuesday, we'll pick the two finalists for each race in a statewide primary election, and far too few of us are paying attention. I'm writing this from Copper Harbor at the northernmost tip of the Upper Peninsula, more than 600 miles from downtown Detroit. Nobody I've met here shows any sign of caring who the next governor, the most powerful individual in the state, will be. Last week, I drove across the sparsely populated UP from St. Ignace to the Sioux, from Marquette to the Keweenaw Peninsula. I saw a lot of signs for local politicians, a few scattered Rick Snyder signs, and none for anyone else running for governor. Candidates usually forget about the UP. Not many people, so it's not worth the trip, the gas money, mm-hmm. the campaign signs. You know, they won't necessarily swing an election, except they might mm-hmm. in a primary because right. there's not right. that many people voting. But nonetheless, I found out, too, and I'm always learning new things, that people who live in the UP are referred to as Upers.
Sure.
You heard that before, maybe?
Oh, sure.
Absolutely.
See, I just don't get around. I don't get up north, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't
you
either.
Might hear it more.
And I've still heard it.
It's on bumper stickers. Yeah. And
now, sure. is that complimentary?
Yeah. It's not derogatory
it's
at all.
Nor there.
It's neutral.
It's just
a fun
Michigander.
It's like
Uper.
A Michigander. Yeah, exactly.
Because it's UP, yeah, and so yeah. you put an ERS on the end of that. You could pronounce it Upers, but they spell it here Y-O-O-P-E-R-S.
I've never seen it spelled that way.
Oh, okay.
Well, I did go to a Ute shoot, a golf outing up north, and it was spelled Y-O-O, you know.
Did you shoot any Upers?
No.
That
and I barely hit
good
the
at
ball.
Aim, though. Yeah.
Okay, back to point here. Upers, with some justification, think they live in another world. But they don't, economically and politically, and the rest of us have even less excuse for thinking so. We need to vote, both next week and in November. Not to decide is to decide. If we make the wrong choices or allow the wrong people to make them for us, things could easily spiral out of control, dooming Michigan to future third world status. Some of the candidates are promising policies that would do just that. In other words, send us to third world status, which I guess means no money for services and right. health care or education or anything. As he says here, they'd slash taxes to the point where the state's universities would be damaged beyond repair. They would deny government the money to keep states' roads and bridges from falling apart, all in the name of the sacred mantra of lower taxes. Lower taxes, they'll tell you, is how you attract new business and industry and jobs to the state. That may have been true in 1880, but nobody today wants to come to a state where the schools don't work and the infrastructure is falling apart. The members of the cult of low taxes are worshiping a false vision. Some other candidates don't seem to have any vision other than that of power for themselves. On Tuesday, those of us who show up will pick the two major party candidates who will face each other in the fall. Yes, there will be other candidates on the November ballot from other political parties that we've mentioned here, and we hope to have some of those candidates in the studio here so we can actually hear the other voices, even though they're from other parties. But as Lessenberry says, they have little chance, especially if nobody ever interviews them, like the major media in Detroit. They have little chance, and in any case, they don't have primary, so that's why they don't get any added publicity or notice, or it's not in people's minds that they're going to have other choices. But in fact, in the case of the Green Party of Michigan, we know it's this weekend that they're this weekend they're going to be choosing their candidate for governor in other races. It's not chosen yet. They will know on Monday. We will know on Monday, but we don't know today. In fact, it was interesting. What was the facility, Amy? I gave you that handout. They're meeting in a church somewhere.
Was it a church?
No, was it a Chinese restaurant?
Chinese restaurant in Ann Arbor.
That's very
or Lansing.
That's
right.
The Green Party.
Yeah, the
that's
Green Party.
Very green.
So I guess Chinese food is more green than McDonald's.
Oh, absolutely.
Probably is.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, But wherever you can find a banquet hall that's cheap, I guess.
Well, I appreciate the fact that they're frugal.
Yeah, exactly. Thrifty, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to fool around in a playland.
No, we do know the names of the Libertarian Party candidates. Ken Proctor is running for governor, and I can't remember the name of the gentleman here in the 15th District, but we'll look it up, and we'll see if we can get them on this show, because nobody else will, and that's too bad. Because how are you going to find out what they're standing for if they are worthy of your
15,
support?
Excuse me, 15th District is Kerry Morgan.
Kerry Morgan.
Of course.
I think that's a man. It's a gentleman, yes.
K-E-R-R-Y.
That's a man.
Oh.
Definitely.
I have a friend who spells her name K-E-R-R-Y.
Really?
Woman, yeah.
Okay. Look it up.
We'll have to talk.
Some people think the name Jay is a woman's name.
No. Really?
There are some women, yeah.
Okay.
And it's not J-A-Y-E. There was an actress, J.P. Morgan.
Really?
That's spelled a J-A-Y-E, but I don't, and it's a man's name. Look it up in the book of male baby names. You know.
Okay,
going on here, let us continue to point. Okay, no vision, little chance, don't have primaries. Okay, so now it's up to you, citizen, to go vote for the candidates for governor and other offices you think are the best, or at least the least bad, what Jeffrey Figer used to call the, quote, less evil of the lessers.
Can I? We do have a gender verification. Kerry Morgan is a man.
Okay, good for him.
Yeah. A gender verification. Yes. I love that. Did you call him real quick?
No, that's a special person.
You called. He said hello.
For
you hung up.
Gender verification.
It's a guy.
This is a mark of the high standards of the WHFR journalists. We do our research. We may get it wrong the first time, but
and the second. The third.
Well, we've got some other qualifications later to mention. But back to Jack Lessenberry. He says, by the way, and we've mentioned this too, in Michigan, we're legally all independents. The state doesn't have any registration by party. So anybody can vote in either primary with no obligation. Either primary. There's actually two primaries. And the only thing that's the same is the proposals and the nonpartisan races that are on the ballot. They're on both the Democratic primary ballot and the Republican primary ballot, but they'll give you either one or the other to vote in, and you have to ask for, you know, which one do you want. Okay, well, the problem is, unlike in the general election in November, you can't switch parties there, so what you can't do is vote for governor in one party's primary and vote for Congress or Michigan representative in the other. In August, unlike November, you either have to vote for all Republicans or all Democrats. That might influence how you vote for governor in some cases, too. For example, if you live in the 13th Congressional District, that includes the eastern half of Detroit, Wyandotte, Lincoln Park, River Rouge, Ecorse, and Grosse Pointe, the most important election is... Okay, the most important election is, I'm sorry, I was hearing something in the background. A little birdie just was chirping in the back of my brain, so apologize
Democratic
for that little gap there. Yes. Okay. I was just thinking, too, that that's a heck of a gerrymandered district, but eastern half of Detroit, but then they come all the way back for Wyandotte.
Right.
Okay, eastern half would be east of like Woodward or something. Then they come all the way back and cover Wyandotte, Lincoln Park, River Rouge, Ecorse, and Grosse Pointe, really long and narrow. So
right.
A lot of different kinds of people in those areas. And why did they do it? Well, it's the Republicans that did it, because they believe by splitting up Detroit and by splitting up these other areas, they have a better chance of winning, getting a Republican elected to this district. And that's just crazy, but that's called gerrymandering, and it is G-E-R-R-Y.
And, and that is neither male nor female?
Not necessarily, no. Okay. If you vote for the GOP candidate for governor there, you lose your chance to help oust or reelect Kwame's mommy, Carolyn Cheeks Kilpatrick.
Otherwise known as...
Yeah. Now, in Dearborn, the Democrats, the 15th District race for Democratic candidate, we have DeRaney, Linda Tefelsky, we have Shamey, and Dubkowski. And so if you want to decide that race, if you've got a candidate there you really want to support or vote for the lesser or the less evils or whatever, then you're in the Democratic primary. You have to vote there because, and for governor, you have a choice, although you don't have to vote. But you have a choice of either Virge Bonero or Andy Dillon. All righty. See? So I know I'm torn a little bit, I have to admit, even though I'm not a Democrat or Republican. I'm an independent, I would say, first thing to other people. I have memberships in Libertarian Party and the Green Party, just so I get those newsletters, that inside information at least. And I'm always open to good candidates, and I'd actually like to help the Republicans pick the lesser of less. No, the best candidate, as I see them. But, of course, some people say, well, you're not really Republican. You shouldn't decide. Well, then don't have a primary. Okay, if Republicans only should decide on the Republican candidate, then why are you doing the primary? They're doing it for the publicity sake, for both the Dems and the Republicans. Mm-hmm. Even though it costs more money, it means you get your name out there earlier, and whoever wins, that person did have their name out there earlier, and that's maybe already convinced people to vote for them in November. So they have a decided advantage by the primary system over the third parties or the minority parties or what have you, the other political parties in Michigan that will be on the ballot in November but haven't gotten any attention yet, which is why the Green Party hasn't even decided their candidates until this weekend, because it doesn't really matter. Nobody will see them anyway on a ballot or on the media. They won't be covered hardly at all anyway, but they certainly won't be covered before August primary because it's not relevant yet. Right. I mean, the Libertarians had their candidate picked at the end of May, I believe, but anybody know about Ken Proctor? No, he was never interviewed by anybody, never covered, even though he is a Libertarian candidate for governor on the November ballot. So there you go. So, that race among the Democrats for 15 district rep, I'd like to help them decide the best person there. So I'd like to vote a little bit in both, but can't. So I've got a real dilemma of which side I'm going to be on for Tuesday. Basically, I'm against primaries, and of course the opinions expressed in this show, including Lessenberry's, are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford Community College. They haven't told us what to say, but thank you for letting us say our many opinions. But I think the primary system is unnecessary, completely unnecessary. I know democracy at work, but as I said, it's really publicity for the Dem and Republican candidates over the minority candidates, and it costs the state a ton of money. Right. If you want to save money, get rid of the primaries. If you're part of a party, a political party, the party should decide for themselves who their right. best candidate is. Don't they know who is the most in line with their platform and their beliefs and who the best candidate to get elected is?
Right.
And if you want to participate in that, become a Dem, Republican, Green Party, or a Libertarian to help them choose the candidates. Otherwise, we don't need these things because they don't allow full participation of all the parties. And even if they did, general electorate people don't necessarily know the ups and downs of all these almost unknown candidates. And therefore, only the candidates who are rich or have a lot of, like, political favors or money coming in from lobbyists are the ones that can get their message out. And that's not right either. So if the best candidate who has the best beliefs is known to those within that party, then they, at their state convention, they get nominated and everybody will be all together on the ballot in November. So I don't know. There we go. Okay, continuing and finishing up the Lessenberry statement from this week's Metro Times. He says, with that in mind, who are the best choices for governor? So here is Jack's opinion. First of all, he says the odds are good the Republicans will win this fall. And I don't know about that. I know the Dems will get sullied by the last 8 years of a Democratic governor, although a Republican Senate, and a Democratic majority House. And times are tough all over the U.S. because of several major problems. And we can blame the auto companies for not having saleable cars and electric and hybrid cars earlier. I mean, after all,
and for outsourcing.
Yeah, and for outsourcing. Toyota, of course, raised to the top or near the top in car sales in the U.S. And that was true a decade ago. And what has GM, Chrysler, or Ford done about that? They're still number two or number three. Ford has bounced back well mm-hmm. without taking federal money, but nonetheless. So, yeah, I know that it's always suggested, also in an off presidential year, where you don't have a big candidate like Obama was in 2008 to help other Dems, maybe by straight party voters, get elected in the separate states, that the other big party, in this case the Republicans, will probably gain some seats for the House and the Senate in Michigan and also in the federal government. That's not decided till November, but I'm saying Republicans have an argument to make. Well, you had the Dems in there, kind of in power, so they didn't do so hot. So, well, can you really blame them? Totally. Give us a chance. Well, I don't know, but I agree with that. The Republicans have a chance, but I don't think it's a done deal for governors in Michigan.
Mm-mm. Well, I think once the Democratic candidates are chosen, and if Governor Granholm comes out and supports that candidate, there's that link again to the past 8 years.
With the kiss of death right there?
Right. I don't think she will. None of them have asked her for an endorsement. She hasn't made an endorsement of either of the two.
Not yet.
And I don't know. I do not think she will. I think it would be a mistake for the Democratic Party, and I think she knows it. She will not endorse or even appear on the speaker platform with whoever the Democratic candidate for governor is, Dillon or Bernero.
Yeah.
That would just be politically wrong. And not necessarily, I mean... I
but
like
can
Governor
they distance
Granholm.
Themselves?
I voted for her, I think, at least once, if not twice. And they need to distance themselves for this. The usual reason is
right.
Republicans will blame the last 4 years, or the last 8 years, and mostly Granholm for the problems. And so she needs to get out of the way, I think, and I'm sure she will. Smelling victory, Lessenberg goes on to say, five candidates have been fighting for the GOP nomination. The four conventional ones are Mike Bouchard, Oakland County Sheriff, Mike Cox, Michigan Attorney General, Tom George, State Senator from Kalamazoo, and Pete Hoekstra, a congressman from Holland. Okay, who are the unconventional ones?
Yeah, that's four.
Schneider.
Oh, thank you, Schneider.
He didn't.
No. Yes,
definitely.
Schneider.
Definitely.
Right.
Definitely.
He's the unconventional.
Yes.
He's the sort of outsider that hasn't really been in the Republican Party.
Boy, I would think George would be the outsider.
No,
Schneider
has
a Republican in the Senate, though. He's part of the party, and he's been elected as a Republican already. Schneider has never been elected.
Never. He's got money
before.
Yeah.
And business sense.
Right. Well, that qualifies him in this type of.
Yeah, keep reading. It's very interesting.
The details here is that he says Bouchard, who had a fairly moderate reputation to start, has now pandered to the far right throughout the campaign, bashing unions and immigrants, right-to-work laws, and however you feel about these things, he's been merciless, and in his simplistic statements, just patently wrong, folks. Most of the world is more complicated than most political campaign sound bites.
Oh, absolutely. Right?
There's no doubt about that,
yeah.
And if you only pick somebody, he seems tough on immigrants.
Right.
Michigan doesn't have an immigrant problem. Okay, we love Canadians. Okay,
and Upers.
I think they and Upers too, and I think they love us because they're able to send most of their trash to Michigan from Toronto, so they love us.
Sure, it's a good thing.
Really, folks, there's an immigration problem in the U.S., and then maybe you want to use that as a criteria for selecting a candidate to be elected to Washington, D.C. for federal office later. But Michigan, we don't have this immigration issue and never have had it. I mean, even they talk about immigrant workers to pick cherries in Traverse City.
I don't know.
They're still from Mexico.
saw Ohio
they're
license
they're not from
plate
Canada, you know. They come from all over, of course. That's it. But why make that a major state of Michigan campaign issue? You're just trying to piggyback on something people are sort of concerned about, but it's not directly relevant. And I've never seen anybody switch so far, as Lessenberry says, from a moderate to an all-out right-winger, almost hate-monger. I'm sorry to go that far. I don't say totally hate him, but a far right, put down artist. Okay. Now, Cox, he says, and of course he's talking about here the man who is our attorney general right now in the state of Michigan. He was elected to that office, a Republican. He says Cox is the most driven and hardest working, but has too often taken the low road, as I think Bouchard just did. In fact, I think Bouchard, he dug a lower road even.
Than the lower, it's not low enough.
Yeah.
I want a tunnel.
But Cox has promised a $2 billion tax cut. Wonderful. Without explaining how he would keep the state running. Okay. That's wonderful for a campaign promise. Then who are you going to put out of work? Senator George, and I've seen him in a couple debates, and he comes off a little wacky. Because I think he can be honest. He doesn't care about politics, and therefore doesn't sound like he cares about winning, but he says, I'm the only candidate that can speak honestly. Now, he's got a couple strange positions, such as Lessenberry doesn't like him because he attempted in the Senate, Michigan Senate, to sabotage embryonic stem cell research, even after the voters approved of it in Michigan in a ballot proposal. Pete Hoekstra started the campaign talking inanely about Homeland Security. Again, not a Michigan issue we all want to be secure in our home or our state. How many terrorist attacks really on the U.S. In the last 10 years?
Okay. Well, one.
Yeah.
The one that flew in from Amsterdam to Detroit.
Yeah. Right.
That was in the last Christmas, wasn't it?
That's where he burned his thighs. Yeah,
that's right.
That's delicately putting it.
And the incompetent guy that left the bomb in New York City parked in Times Square, which David Letterman went on and said, this guy is a genius. He found a parking space in Times Square.
No.
This is fantastic. He's such a smart guy. You know, how did he do it? That's what we got to question him about.
We don't know how long he waited.
You know, and he confessed, and we never found out how he got that parking spot. That is the real question. Of course, if you know New York City, you know, it's almost impossible to find an open parking place outside of a garage. So anyway, Hoekstra has great suits, by the way, but he's represented the western side of the state in Washington. So anything bad that happened in Washington, from the bailout of Wall Street or the bailout of the car company, he's been sullied by all the other negative attacks from these other Republicans and being associated with all those bad things. But that was it was a bad national thing.
Right.
What would he do in the state? Okay, there's differences there.
And did he learn from those experiences? You're right.
Exactly. Again, the suits, the tailoring on him, of course, he's a large-sized person, probably about $1,200 suits. I mean, you don't see suits that form-fit unless you grow into them, or they're spandex or something, unless you pay a fortune for them. And is that what you want your representative to pay their money, spend their money on their suits? Anyway, Rick Snyder, who can afford his own suits. But he doesn't usually wear suits. You know, he's that common guy. His open collar, mostly. Now, he was in Dearborn. He's had 52 town halls around the state, and I don't think we could get there. I found out Tuesday that he was coming in Wednesday night here to Dearborn, or was it Tuesday night? And they changed the venue from a church somewhere in Dearborn.
To a Chinese restaurant.
No, to right here on campus, Henry Ford Community College, to the ASCC building in that small, the Barry Auditorium.
You're talking about 2 days ago.
Yeah, 2 days ago. He was right there, 6:15 to 7:30, but we find out about it by email, those of us that are on his email list, which means if you weren't already a supporter or on the media, you wouldn't know what was going to happen. So what good is a town hall like that? But they're planning all these candidates, these town halls so quickly, they have no way to get the word out to the general public.
Right.
Well, and even we could announce it, and even Amy Dennis and I mean, right now we're only, 500 yards away from the Barry Auditorium here on this campus. We didn't even know the change in venue until an hour before it came to my.
We're less than 100 yards.
You think?
Oh, absolutely. Less than
the way I walk.
Field. I'll give you a piggyback. But the point is that, we could have been there. And that kind of saddens me a little bit.
At least he was on this show.
Yeah, we did talk to him.
So he gets a WHFR bump. Yep. And the few people around town, not necessarily influential Republicans, but that I've talked to, like him, amazingly. And I don't know, they didn't say they're going to vote for him. But and I think the big endorsement, as Lessenberry goes on here this week, former Governor William Milliken, which a lot of people knew and loved, a moderate Republican, definitely elected in a Democratic Michigan state for many, many years. I don't know how many terms. He may had
at least
10 years in office, if not 12 or 14 or 16. Anyway, he's endorsed him, as has the Michigan League of Conservation Voters. Now, that's not the Sierra Club, but Michigan League of Conservation Voters, if you scratch the surface, it's people in favor of hunting. It's that kind of conservation. Conserve the animals so we can shoot them. I'm sorry, folks, but they do have some environmental issues they touch on, but it's primarily an amalgam of lobbyists for hunting.
But only for population control, right?
Of humans. No, of animals, yes.
Okay.
Of course, of course. Yeah. They would die anyway.
Well, it sounds like Snyder's hunting Democrats.
Yeah. So he, we'll see. And who is... Lessenberry say who he wants?
No, he goes on to talk about the Dems, too. This is interesting.
Yeah.
He does talk about who he wants.
Yeah, he says Mark DeBias, a colorful attorney in Sault Ste. Marie, characterizes the Democratic race for governor this way, quote, "It's like being lost in a cold and wet cedar swamp in November with a wet matchbook. Survival is seriously in question."
I love that. That's great.
I haven't been in a cedar swamp recently. November or otherwise.
That's theater of the mind right there.
Yeah, well, the guys from Sault Ste. Marie, I guess they have a lot of cedar swamps
up
there.
That's a whole other, you're right.
A lot colder there. But he says, Lessenberry goes on to say, most of the unions are behind Verge, quote-unquote, angry man Bernero, the mayor of Lansing. And he was on our show here, and he wasn't quite that angry when we talked to him. But he spoke awfully quickly.
He did. He said a lot.
And Lessenberry said that's mostly because they're punishing The unions are punishing Speaker of the House Andy Dillon for proposing lessening benefits for public sector workers since the state can no longer afford what it used to because nearly a million private sector workers are out of jobs. Making sense, Lessenberg goes on to say, is politically dangerous. Bernero often goes off half-cocked. He has taken Matty Marone's money. Matty Marone owns the Ambassador Bridge. And boy, Lessenberg has gone after him many times about Marone. Marone is a billionaire. Mm-hmm. Maybe a couple times over, I don't know. And he's boo-hooing that if they build a second bridge, he will lose money. And, oh my, he won't lose that much. Anyway, and it's clearly would be good for business. Everybody said so. And now Canada's proposed to pay the lion's share up front for the second bridge because it'll be good for their commerce with the U.S. too.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Bernero is against it. He's against the Detroit River International Crossing Bridge, which is called CRIC. Which I think is cute about a creek.
Sure.
Detroit River's not a creek yet, but it hasn't passed. Wasn't that a bill in the Senate? I don't think it's come out of the legislature yet, one way or the other.
Either way, I don't think it's been resolved.
Hasn't come through, no. And Lessenberry says, when I questioned Bernero about this issue, the creek issue, he showed an astonishing lack of comprehension of the issues. And when presented with information about Maroon's career as a slumlord and generally bad citizen, said he believed in the possibility of deathbed conversion.
Hmm.
What a wit this guy has. But can we wait for Maroon's deathbed is what I ask here. That's a metaphor, Mr. Bernero, that is a little bit in timeline here. I know, I think Maroon is like in his 80s. I mean, he's up there in years, but it doesn't mean he's going to convert. Okay, Verge, Lessenberry says, is at his best when identifying the faults of his opponent, whom he calls the speaker of the mess.
We call them that here, too.
Yeah, yeah. Because they get those sound bites, and they learn them early, and they repeat them over and over.
Did you catch a lot of them?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's got a whole list, I'm sure.
He does.
Probably speaks them in the mirror in the morning to himself.
Probably. How to deal with hecklers. Yeah.
He is absolutely right. He says, Verge is absolutely right when he says that Dillon was too timid and too willing to trust his rival, GOP Senate Majority Leader Mike Bishop, who we invited on this show, by the way, oodles of times in the last 2 years.
Oodles and a lot. That's more than two.
Oodles. You can't count how many oodles. Just like noodles. How many noodles on your plate of spaghetti? You can't count them. No, there's too
you
many.
You could, but who wants oodles?
Right. Yeah. You'd die of starvation. Okay. Who played him like a violin. Played Dillon like a violin. Okay. Interesting metaphor. Dillon has been largely ineffective as a legislative leader, according to Lessenberry, though he was handicapped by having the weakest governor in modern times as leader of his party. But he's shown sign of growth. He says about Dillon, he supports the new bridge. He supports it. He's going to hold up one of the spans himself.
Oh, that's too funny.
Well, that's one way to
and understands the issues, you know. And I've seen him on debates against Bernardo, and all of Bernardo always gets his words in first and last.
Yeah.
And with gusto, Dillon does, for those people that care, does seem to be maybe a little more level-headed. And
yeah.
I think Bernardo, if he does win here, he's going to have to get softer. He's going to have to get folksier, softer.
I don't see him getting softer.
Well, he'll attack
wins.
Republicans yes. viciously, but I think his
really?
Spots.
You don't think that's shtick? You don't think that's the routine? You think that he's really that hard?
You know, the surveys show, because of voters voting, especially in November,
yeah.
That negative campaigning, that is dissing on your
Absolutely.
Competition, helps you more than talking about what a great person, great ideas you yourself have.
But then when you win, don't you...
Time,
go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, at the same time, stating how much you dislike negative advertising.
Oh, yeah, hypocrisy.
Campaigning, not advertising.
Well,
I'm not in favor of it.
Right.
But exactly. As long as you're doing it to me...
I'm just wondering if Bernardo wins, if at that point he just kind of softens a little and says, all right, Wyatt. You know? Okay. All right. We'll
to con- well, to conclude, and we've taken, what is it, 37 minutes already of the hour.
It's an important election.
But it's an important election. Lessenberry says that Dillon is clearly the better choice between Dillon and Bernardo, if only because he's the only candidate who has tried to do something sensible about the Michigan budget mess. None of these guys look like saviors. And I don't know if he's referring to Bernardo Dillon as these guys or all six of them or seven of them.
I think all of them.
Yeah. But he concludes, he says, then again, Franklin D. Roosevelt didn't look like a savior at the start either. In the midst of the Great Depression, 1932, when Franklin D. Roosevelt was elected, who knew that he would have had all the proposals, all the ideas that turned this country around, including Social Security, mm-hmm. which helped give us and ideas, temporary work ideas like the Civilian Conservation Corps mm-hmm. that built most of our bridges and roads in rural areas. They're still hanging in there after all these years. And the dams, the hydroelectric power plants for the country using clean energy. So many ideas came about because of the crisis we were in from 1929 to 1932 and FDR. And the Democratic Party at that time, whoever they were, changing philosophies from maybe the Democrats today, but they made those changes. And most of them were for the good. Some Republicans and some revisionary historians are saying, we would have come out of that depression eventually anyway. Oh, yeah, right. I was fairly close to it. My parents told me a story. They lived through it, and I don't think so. Things were so tough. The images, the pictures, the photographs right. I saw, the stories from my parents and grandparents. I think big government had to do something. They were the only ones that could have, But now it's a strange, complicated situation. People out of work can't just go to a soup line.
Or family.
Yeah. Today we do have some unemployment compensation and the whole family issue, because usually only one so-called breadwinner mm-hmm. or, one income. And so... So things are a little stranger now, but who knows? Okay, we're gonna pause just for a comment from Jim Lessenberry. Jim Hightower. First initial.
Yeah, Lessenberry had his time. Yep. We'll give him enough.
And we'll be right back with the conclusion of our special election show. We're going to feature a local opinion from Morris Goodman, too, about the importance of this election getting out there, and a couple of corrections on election races that we got wrong in terms of the details and the importance of them and so on in the last couple shows. So listen to Hightower and then come back and listen to us, too.
Shirley Sherrod's story started as a beautiful anecdote of redemption and personal growth, which she recently related at a meeting of the Georgia NAACP. Her story would have ended there, unnoticed by the rest of us, but it was picked up in a malicious political wind that swept it all the way to Washington. There, it sucked up an enormous volume of hot air, then burst into the national news like a furious tornado, ripping the roofs from several big houses of power to reveal a mess of ugliness within. Ugly number one is Andrew Breitbart, a far right-wing blogger who is striving for his 15 minutes of infamy by intentionally distorting, manipulating, and lying about the actions of unsuspecting people to create explosive political tales. He took a 38-second edited clip that perverted Sherrod's Georgia speech, making it look like she and the NAACP are anti-white racists. This guy is a creep. Ugly number two are the Becks, Hannitys, O'Reillys, and other foam-at-the-mouth Fox TV blatherers. These shameless media muggers eagerly grabbed Breitbart's crap and hurled it across America as truth. Ugly number three is the Obama White House, which swallowed the Breitbart Fox false story whole and immediately dismissed Sherrod from her federal job. They literally tracked her down in her car and forced her to phone in her resignation without letting her tell the true story. This is Jim Hightower saying, to me, the Obama ugliness is the worst, for it reveals a shameful lack of loyalty, fairness, and feistiness. Like Acorn and Van Jones before, Sherrod was under vicious and false attack from Obama's enemies, but the Obamacans are so afraid of right-wing smear artists that they instantly run from them, cravenly abandoning their friends. Hello? If you don't stand for your friends, who do you think's going to stand for you?
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publisher of Hightower's new book titled Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow, now available wherever books are sold.
And we're back with more of the new WHFR Journal election special for the primary election August 3rd coming up. I'm here with Amy and Dennis, and wanted to feature next, as I told you, the Morris Goodman statement. Shame on the Dearborn Press and Guide. Shame on the Dearborn Times Herald. No recommendations from their editorial staff. That's a coward's way out. Reporters, editors, they're connected deeper at deeper levels
Absolutely.
Than any of us, including those of us here in this station, and they have reneged on a major responsibility I think that all journalists have. And I know they're worried about subscribers. Oh, you supported a Democrat, so I'm not going to subscribe or read anymore. It's just crazy. They have a right to their opinions, and their opinions are worth more than the rest of ours because they know they have had more direct experience. They've seen these people in more ways at more times, and even if they can't give you all of that information in the stories, I mean, some of it may be quote unquote off the record,
sure,
but how they endorse. At these times, who they recommend, they're only recommending, you don't take the recommendations, mm-hmm. I think is a valuable bit of information. You shouldn't vote the way anybody recommends, myself or Lessenberry or anyone else, without fully thinking about all the issues and reading and studying as much as you can. And the newspaper recommendations are totally essential. And if I didn't value what else they were doing, I'd cancel my subscriptions to both papers for over the last several years. It didn't just happen this week. Not giving us recommendations for candidates for office for upcoming elections. But here's Morris Goodman's opinion, and he says this in last Wednesday, July 28th, Press and Guide. He says, a July 25 Press and Guide lists the party candidates for the August 3 primary elections, but makes no recommendations. So there you go. Okay? He doesn't say that's bad. I'm saying it's bad that they didn't do that. But he says then, neither do I hear. Well, thanks, Morris. I mean, you have an editorial opinion column. You'd think at least they could cover up their recommendations by getting somebody in town to write an editorial opinion. Oh, it's not our opinion at the paper. It's his opinion. We just happened to put it in there because it was well-written.
Right. Kind of hedged their bet a little.
No, sure. They could have hedged their bet by having... But he says, of course, as he's mentioned in other columns, he's on the committee to elect George Duraney to state rep.
Hmm.
So he's kind of biased. He probably would endorse George,
right?
And so he wants to stay out of it. Okay. Also, he says, from my Democratic partisan perspective, he's known when they do those Democrat versus Republican editorials with, is it John Connolly and Republican in Dearborn? Mm-hmm. What's the Republican side? What's the Democratic side locally on these national issues? And different every month or so they do it. So he's known as a Democrat. So, well, he's biased. He's obviously going to pick Democrats or Republicans because he's a Democrat.
Right.
But my point of view is, intelligent people, we want to know your reasoning,
mm-hmm.
the reasons behind your choices. Anybody that votes for a Democrat because they happen to have membership in the Democratic Party, if that's your only reason, that's not a good reason. But if you philosophically believe in the Democratic Party and the candidate supports those same positions that you agree with, then that's a reason to vote for that candidate. Otherwise, this sort of lockstep, oh, he's a Democrat, I've always been a Democrat, I'll vote for a Democrat. That's totally wrong. You're not doing anybody a service in our great country by making an unintelligent vote. And never assume that a candidate. I mean, look at the Republican candidates for governor. Those are like four different categories of Republicans. I mean,
sure.
I don't know if anyone could be called totally mainstream, although maybe one of them is more moderate mm-hmm. than the others. But, you know, that's a really very different Republican Party as represented by each of the Republican candidates for governor. Okay, he goes on to say, though, he says, but this column that he writes here from last Wednesday is not about the who of election politics, but about the why of election politics. He goes on to say, every election, politicians, good government types, newspaper editorial boards, and commentators of all stripes say how important it is to vote. But the simple act of voting has importance far beyond who wins and loses. He says there's a great deal written about and proclaimed on talk radio. Ooh, that's us. Isn't it? No.
Start seeing it, Amy.
We're a news show, and we talk a lot. Anyway, cable stations and the internet about the power of the Tea Party movement. Well, he says that alleged, in quotes, alleged power only means anything if those supporting Tea Party themes of reversing the growth of big government and lowering taxes express themselves at the ballot box. The same idea applies equally to those who think that in this time of weak national and Michigan economies, only government can make sure there is a viable safety net to keep individuals and businesses afloat. He says there are predictions that the turnout in Michigan and in the August 3rd primary election, next Tuesday, folks, will be very low. Hopefully, for the sake of our democracy, that prediction proves untrue. There are real differences in the gubernatorial primaries between Dillon and Bonero on the Democratic side and Hoekstra, Cox, Snyder, George, and Bouchard on the Republican side, as we've already said. There are also real differences between party candidates for Congress and all the other offices in play. Citizens need to cast their ballot for those who best reflect their views on the important issues facing the nation and the state. And he's not going to go into details about that. He says, it's not my purpose here to delineate how to resolve the paramount issues of the day. I've done that and will continue to do that, Present Guide editor Tim Powers willing, in the future. What is of concern to me is the apparent sense on the part of the disaffected and dispossessed that there's nothing that can be done to deal with the problems in our country and the state, or like the youpers that Jack Lesenberry referred to, who at least those particular youpers that he talked to didn't seem to make any difference to them. He says, because of term limits and other factors, primarily retirements and resignations, there will be a new Michigan governor and many new faces in the Michigan House and Senate, in the United States House and Senate, too. Who these new office holders will be may greatly depend on who wins party primaries on August 3rd. The United States is engaged in two wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. U.S. soldiers die every day defending American interests and values in a chaotic and dangerous world. You know, I'm sick and tired now, after 9 years in Afghanistan and Iraq, of every day I go past the Dearborn Post Office and the banks in Dearborn here on Michigan Avenue, and their flags are always our American flag. And, you know, I'm really a patriot of the world, folks. I'd like the world to exist in the future, not just one country over another with all these partisan battles. But it hurts me, even as a patriot of the world, to see the American flag always flying half-mast.
Oof.
You know, let's send more soldiers. That's what one side would say to get that mass back up on the war. The war needs to be over, you know. It's like George Orwell, 1984, his dystopian view of the future was that they're always at war. The politicians will keep you always at war so they can get reelected. And so they can muddle the issues, you know. We got to keep the war budget going. We got to keep the wars going with them. If we solve one war, let's find another war. Because actually, politically, it's the way to keep control, to have a police state, and to keep controversies down and criticisms down from people. Oh, you criticize us in a time of war or something. It's a ploy that George Orwell wrote this fiction story about that all politicians use. Yes, George Bush used it, and even Obama had to keep it going for political reasons, you know, with Afghanistan, because he might be too criticized as being soft on war on Fox News or something. And I think the 92,000 documents this week and all the books that I've read, even before we got into Iraq, the behind-the-scenes in-depth reports from the people who are there, both of these wars are wrong. The only thing I agreed in, and a lot of people would, let's find bin Laden. Let's prosecute him and the people that were involved in the planning of the attack on New York City, okay, and the Pentagon back in 2001. Okay, but he's not in Afghanistan. And we don't know where he is, and we can't get him, and that failed. What the heck? And in Iraq, weapons of mass destruction? No. No, I knew they weren't there. Insiders knew they weren't there. And if I knew it, I know, after the fact, it's easy to say that, Cornick. Even the New York Times now, we believed the wrong people. Well, we should have looked at the facts then. New York Times knew, but they didn't want to report it that way because it would be unpatriotic in a time of war or something.
And that's one of the most frightening statements.
Yes.
You know, that our own newspapers are intimidated or frightened by, you know, the
not
impression
being on
of
the patriotic bandwagon.
Exactly.
And even Fox News, MSNBC, CNN, they know in time of war their ratings go up because people watch the reports more. If their ratings go up, they make more profit. So their big owners like profits. It's a business, folks, even in a time of war, and they get to wave the patriotic flag so they make more money that way.
Are you kidding? Especially in a time of war. You're exactly right.
Especially,
sensationalize
yeah.
it, sure.
Absolutely.
Well,
sensationalize it. However, and I think those 92,000 documents, not that, you know, it's old news. Hmm. Yeah, it's ongoing news. It's still the news that applies now. We're not going to win Afghanistan because the people there and in Pakistan are playing against us.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Didn't we learn anything from the Soviet Union being in there?
Yeah, they couldn't win the war.
They couldn't. They're right on top of there. They couldn't win it.
Yeah.
We're not going to, you know.
They're not a third-rate country when it comes
yeah,
to military power.
Exactly.
They couldn't win it. Karzai is the most corrupt leader
Ugh.
Anywhere in the world, and we help keep him there.
Yeah.
You know, and Pakistan is playing us back and forth. They get $1 billion a year in support, and they give most of it back to the insurgency, or whatever you want to call the Taliban, in their country that's also fighting across the border. And the territory, the geography, nobody can really win that war with high tech, even if we had twice as many soldiers there. They're not with us.
And
we can't nation build. We couldn't nation build in Iraq. They don't want our way of a democracy. You know, there's the Kurds, there's the two different type of Muslims in the south part of Iraq, and they don't want to work together among themselves, but they certainly don't want us as part of it. We're the outsiders, and they feel that way in Afghanistan. So we can't nation build. We can't put a democracy in either of those places. It's not going to work, no matter how much money or time. And I don't want to see the flag at half-mast anymore. So, okay, that's a diversion here. But Morris ended with the mention of Afghanistan. Even Lessenberry said, the primary and November 3rd, we get to pick the people that may take us one direction or another, either improve it or be much the worse for their opinions and their actions. Mm-hmm. No saviors here, no miracle workers, but your choices will make that difference, even, you know, by one vote, maybe. So do vote Tuesday. If you can't make it Tuesday, I think you can go to your local city hall, city clerk's office, and vote absentee ballot right in person on Monday, even. So if you already got an absentee ballot, you need to get it back to them
right
by Monday, or you can turn it in person. If you don't trust the post office, you can turn it in person there. Otherwise, be sure to vote and, you know, get a group going. Call your friends. Go together. Make it a social event.
That's interesting.
Go out to lunch or breakfast after you vote, you know.
Well, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
To make it an event. We do that.
And if somebody can't get to the ballot because they're infirm or they're not feeling well, offer them a ride. You know, be friendly. Somebody next door has got mobility problems. Maybe you want to help them. You don't have to vote for them, but you help them get the. I mean, that's the democratic spirit, and that's being a good citizen. And we do. It's a very important election to go to. Now, a couple other stories. One I've got to straighten out because it's been my fault, and Amy and Dennis very, very in a friendly way or because of my authority and power, they didn't straighten this out in the past, is that the 3rd Senate District in Michigan does overlap all of Dearborn. And I said the current person in that office was Alma Wheeler-Smith. Okay, she was mentioned as a candidate for governor on the Democratic side. She might still be a candidate for lieutenant governor. She's not from this area, is she? Amy, did you find an answer?
No, I was just sort of raising, I don't think you said she was the representative in this district. I think you mentioned her running in another district. She had dropped out of the race for the governor. She was one of the 3 Democratic candidates.
Oh, mm-hmm. That's such a graceful qualification. I think I said it wrong,
okay.
So I'll have to go back and listen to
the archive. Listening.
But who is running there? Well, okay, we'll turn to the press and guide from this
More
Wednesday. Right on page 1A, 3 Democrats are seeking the 3rd state Senate district. Yeah, there's a Republican, but it's only one person, so guess who's going to win that race? So we'll find out about that person later, maybe. But the seat right now being vacated for the Michigan, state of Michigan, you know, go to Lansing, 3rd Senate District, which is all of Dearborn, east and west, River Rouge, and was it part of Detroit?
Yes, parts of Detroit.
And a portion of Detroit, is Irma Clark Coleman, Democrat, and she's term limited, and so she's out of office, so she can't run again. Okay, so on the Democratic ticket are Morris Hood, and you might remember that name because he was a former state representative for the 11th District. And he served Dearborn and Detroit from 2003 to 2008. So that's where he heard that name. Didn't he run for city council in Detroit or something?
Morris Hood. Is this where we get into
Let's issues. Not worry about it. No. But and then also on the Democratic ticket is Oki Mohammed.
Yeah.
Oki Mohammed is endorsed by the American Federation of Teachers for this, by the way. He has not responded to any questionnaires about his background. Of course, we haven't asked him, but other sources, League of Women Voters, you know, he is endorsed by the AFT because he was formerly part of the Detroit Teachers Association management. He's a former president? No, I don't think so. But he was part of the AFT in Detroit for Detroit Teachers, and so they endorse him because they want a teacher in there. But he has been like a totally silent candidate. And Muhammad did not respond to a request from the Press and Guide either about this. Now, the other candidate is William Isaac Robinson. He looks to me like the Democratic Party sanctioned nominee. He's had ads a lot of places.
Everywhere.
He's an attorney. And he says he's going to create jobs and strengthen education, do everything. He's playing on his Irishness. He's got 3-leaf clovers there. You know, Robinson. If you didn't know, that's an Irish name. I didn't know Robinson was Irish.
Did you say he's playing on his Irishness?
Yeah, obviously.
That's awesome.
Yeah, or he's hoping for good luck from the the clover.
Right. We don't want to assume.
Irishly.
Right. And if you look in his background, he was a lawyer for many years for the Teamsters Union.
Hmm.
So does he know unions? Well, he knows the Teamsters Union because he's been their lawyer in this area, at least, for a long time. I think 16 years or something, and I'm not totally accurate there, but I'm just saying he seems to be getting the money from the support from the Democratic Party because his ads are everywhere. So he's got money from somewhere to do the ads, and his name is William Isaac Robinson. So who would you be for if you were a Democrat? That's a choice you have to make here in Dearborn, folks. Now, Dearborn Heights, we don't have time to go into that, but boy, there's choices there, and the Times Herald and the Press and Guide has more, and we have only like a minute and a half left here, but we will continue. The podcast goes until about 2 minutes after, and we're waiting to start Highway 61. As soon as Joanne Korchinska pops through the doorway, then she'll start a show. I think she's probably trying to dissolve a lozenger. She had laryngitis 2 days ago, could hardly speak, but she will rise to the occasion today, or I will be speaking for her somewhat, but she says she's going to be here one way or the other. So this is WHFR Dearborn, by the way. You're listening to a continuation of the Press and Guide and the Times Herald reports on the election. What else did I want to mention?
Well,
I wanted to mention
Snyder.
Yeah, Snyder has an endorsement this week. If you saw the latest ads for Snyder, Bill Ford Jr. That's right. Bill Ford Jr., formerly on our Henry Ford Community College
board,
which is development board, and he served here for about 8 years, did great fundraising for us, and he's been on ads for Henry Ford Community College too, and he is now endorsing in the TV ads, and he doesn't like to do TV ads. I know because I was here with him when he was on one of our ads for the college as we recorded on campus, and he's a very shy guy and kind of nervous and nice. He's a real person. He's actually not a big pompous so-and-so like Henry Ford II was, great leader, no doubt, of Ford Motor, but very nice guy, and so he's in that clip now. He's only 5 seconds of the 30-second ad, but he's at the end, big finish.
No, he's 1-6.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
Bill Ford Jr. Supporting Rick Snyder for
governor. What a way to end it. Yeah.
Yeah. What else?
Michigan once again cut out of the race to the TAP funds. We had Martin Ackley, the director of communications, on the show when Michigan was cut out of the first round of funds. And if you recall, the Secretary of Education, Arne Duncan, had called Detroit a national disgrace.
Mm-hmm.
And we were just astounded that they had been even left out of that first round. Here we are, you know, second round. We're not part of that. So that's disappointing. Governor Granholm had said that they would be we felt our strong application effectively detailed our efforts to improve education and student performance, but it didn't sway.
Locally and statewide, the state boards of ed collectively and the legislature endorsed and supported all the new initiatives that were suggested nationally. Most of them, as a teacher, I thought were noble, but sort of like the